The Majority Report, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. Even Saturday and Sunday are casual. Sorry, Jesus. So don't forget your denim hip huggers. Don't forget your bootcut jeans. We're not afraid of dungarees on the Majority Report.
Are we done?
We're done.
It is indeed Casual Friday, December 10th, 2010. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the Majority Report. We are streaming live in the literal but not metaphorical shadow of the New York Times in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. I'm annoyed today, folks. You know, someone said to me the other day, like, man, it's just getting really depressing. How can you do your show? How are people listening to your show with all this? Pretty soon this show is going to have to end up morphing into basically a daily lesson on how to sharpen your pitchforks and the best way to make a delicious chicken Kiev from your freeze-dried food. Unbelievable. We have two pieces of tape today. Well, I don't even know why a tape. We don't even have Scotch tape anymore. We don't even use any like tape to put stuff on the walls.
We didn't even have
no. It's
phones.
All right. It's all MP3s. We have two, I should say, parcels of audio for you today, and it's hard for me to know which one is more crazy: the one from Glenn Beck or the one from Barack Obama. Frankly, from President Obama. But as we always do on Fridays, in a moment or two, we will take a break and we'll go to Chris Rosen, the editor, or he has some position at MovieLine.com. I don't know. It seems to either I forget it every week or he seems to change it every week. I can't figure out what it is. To give us some suggestions on movies, as you know, folks, I'm not allowed to leave the house to go see a movie. And so I need to have my computer near me at all times so that I'm able to read the latest news that is coming down the pike. And so he gives us suggestions as to what to watch on Netflix streaming or on demand. And I refuse to listen to any on-demand suggestions that are over $3.99 or maybe $4.99. They seem to creep the price up every week. I also want to say to one of our Uber Majority Report members, a professional leftist, ladies and gentlemen. She emailed me yesterday right after the show started, so I didn't see this. She didn't have a chance to get her personalized Bush pardon video. So I wanted to wish a happy birthday to professional leftist Janet. Thank you so much for your support, Janet, and I hope that you had a wonderful birthday yesterday. And you know what? Celebrate it today. You can take 2 days to celebrate your birthday. We're going to get into the tax deal, the state of play on where it is, and actually a really interesting piece as to written by a political scientist. I can't remember what university he's from. Somewhere in California. We should actually have this guy on. This is a really fascinating, short blog post, but very fascinating as to sort of a description of where the lines are drawn on this tax deal. And I think really this piece is going to be a very interesting model as to where we go forward from here, because it is becoming clearer and clearer that Barack Obama is not an ally in our fight in this. Barack Obama is one of those forces that we're going to have to be fighting against and trying to figure out where there's leverage. And if there's any, frankly, any honest people in government anymore. I'm looking down the list here. I don't have any good news. The best thing I have to say today is that God help me for saying this, Joe Lieberman may be on our side with Don't Ask, Don't Tell. I highly doubt it. And just you know, the fact that I am actually saying those words, that we may be relying on Joe Lieberman for some positive policy change, is horrifying, terrifying to me. But I will give credit where credit's due if it turns out that way. Whenever Joe Lieberman comes out in favor of something that I support, it leads me to believe that it's already a dead issue, that it's already a dead letter. So we're going to take a break. We come back, we'll be talking to Mr. Chris Rosen. And then later in the program, we're going to hear from a representative from my favorite charity. It's a little late for Hanukkah, but it's never too late to give a gift of charity to someone. And, of course, what's that? There's that big holiday coming up. Boxer Day?
New Year's?
Christmas. Oh, right. Christmas. We'll be right back after this. We are back on the phone-ish. We don't use phones anymore, folks. Forget it. Phones are out. We have, of course, Chris Rosen. He is the editor, senior editor of MovieLine.com. Let me just up your volume there. Are you there, Chris?
Yes. Can you hear me, Sam?
I am. Now... We were sitting here trying to ask, remember what it is you suggested to us last week. They couldn't have been too. I certainly wasn't going to watch that TV show you suggested.
Okay, I also suggested Scott Pilgrim versus the World, but I guess you didn't watch that one.
No, we tried. I tried to convince Nikki; she wouldn't let me do it.
I didn't think. I knew that was going to be a tough sell for Nikki. I really did.
I'm going to try again because I still want to watch it. That sounds pretty
good.
It
was fun. It was pretty fun. But this week I have other ones that maybe you could convince her. I don't know. We'll see.
All right. Now, you know, Dorsey basically started working your side of the street right after the show last week. And then just coincidentally, did you guys see this? I got an email like hours later recommending the same movie. But let's wait and hear what your suggestions are because you're the
Dorsey's
professional.
Suggestion?
Let's wait and hear what yours are and see if it's the same one as Dorsey's. Because starting to think that maybe Dorsey should be the senior editor of MovieLine.
Oh, come on. Maybe. Yeah, he could. He does very well at, you know, New York and stuff, so that's fine.
Now, you told me we had to do this now because you have some type of meeting, but I'm looking at you on the video feed right now. Are you going to shave before you go to this meeting?
Yeah, no, the meeting's on the phone you know, the internet phone.
I understand.
You were saying one does phones anymore.
I understand, but you better hope it's not video because
it's not.
I tried that whole thing where you don't shave going into work. Look where it got me. I'm now broadcasting from a closet.
I know. It looks. I see coats hanging up behind you.
You see coats hanging up behind you. That's your own image.
Oh, right. I'm sorry. I didn't realize what I was looking at. We look so much alike.
Yeah. That's why I wear glasses. So I can distinguish between the other two.
Maybe I should get glasses. All right. So anyway, we'll start with On Demand because I want to start there. And I was really think you should like On Demand a movie called Please Give.
Please Give. Oh, that sounds
Have
like
you heard
a,
about that?
A very angst-ridden, overwrought title. What?
It's a very angst-ridden and somewhat overwrought white people problems movie, but it's from director Nicole Holofcener, who did Lovely and Amazing and Kicking and Screaming and a bunch of other films like that. You never saw any of these. She works a lot with Catherine Keener. Do you know her?
You know, I mean, I don't know. I feel awkward even saying this, but the one story I heard about Kicking and Streaming, which I never saw, but before her next movie, I think it was, she actually showed everyone Who's the Caboose that was sent around on video. Of course, I got no residuals from it or nothing in that, but that's the only thing I know about her.
You're tied to all these famous people, Sam.
Yes, I'm.
And then
right,
what
exactly.
Happened?
Right, exactly. I'm talking to you on a video phone.
So anyway, Please Give It came out early this year. It came out in the spring. It was very underseen, but very well received. Catherine Keener stars. She's like a dissatisfied, you know, rich white housewife who right. lives in the city. And her and her husband, who's played by Oliver Platt, who, do you know him? He's a
of course.
Gentleman.
Of course.
Of course. Oliver Platt. What they do is they buy antique furniture, but they like kind of scam it. So it's like they'll go to somebody's house, like if your grandmother died and you have all this crap and you're like, oh, well, I want to just get rid of this. They'll be like, yeah, we'll give you $100 for that table. And the table, and then they refurbish it and then sell it to a bunch of, you know, stupid hipsters for like five times as much or whatever.
Okay.
So she's like dissatisfied with her life and trying to like do better by, you know, humanity. And meanwhile, while that's going on, well, there's another
story. Don't ruin
story.
The movie. I mean,
I'm not ruining it. I'm just okay. telling you. And then there's another story on the side where their neighbor, they're trying to do the same thing in their house where they have an old lady living next door to them and they want to buy her. They have a deal where they get her apartment. Like they helped her out. They gave her a loan and they get her apartment and they're going to break the wall down. So they're kind of waiting for her to die and her daughters or granddaughters are in there with her. And it's like the whole thing kind of ties together. And it has like, it's one of those, you know, it's a real indie movie, very New York. You know, it's pretty funny. It's very poignant at times, and I liked it a lot. If you like Catherine Keener, I think you'll love it.
I do like Catherine Keener.
I mean, she's fantastic in it. And, you know, Oliver Platt does his, you know, fat Oliver Platt thing.
Right. No, nobody does the fat Oliver Platt thing like Oliver Platt.
Truly.
Even when he's slimmed down, he does that very
well. I don't think he's ever been slimmed down.
Well, I'm talking relatively speaking.
All right.
I try and get people.
Anyway, so that was a great one. I think you could do that. It's on demand.
On demand.
And it's only like $4.99.
Okay, $4.99. Have you noticed the prices of these things have gone up?
Yeah, I have. I noticed my stupid effing cable bill went up, too. It's like 100 and whatever now.
Right. It's like $15,000 a month now for cable.
For time, I have Time Warner. What do you have?
Time Warner.
You know.
Right.
What are you going to do?
I don't know. What are you going to do?
What can you do?
I got to hook up, 14 different boxy... I would love to go all just online, but for the life of me, could they make this any more complicated? The Google TV looks like you need to have a PhD in electrical engineering to figure out that whole thing.
I know. Well, you know, you have to be Kevin Bacon, I guess. Have you seen the commercial? That one right over your head, huh?
No.
You don't watch enough TV, Sam.
No, sorry.
Anyway, following up then on Netflix On Demand, since you told me last week you were able to, you know, open up a whole new world to me by having old movies allowed
right.
instead of just new stuff. Because
well,
frankly,
certainly
nothing...
better than old TV series.
Parks and Recreation is a good TV series. I'll stand by that recommendation. That show is funny.
All right.
Anyway. Old movie, and I was thinking, you know, today The Tourist comes out, which you're not going to get to see because you're an adult with adult responsibilities. You don't go to the movies. It stars Johnny Depp and Angelina Jolie, right? You've seen the commercials?
I haven't, but I'm familiar with both those actors. And
both those actors are in a film. They exist.
Right.
This film exists, and it's like an espionage thriller, so I was trying to think of like a movie.
Oh, those are the kind
like...
of – I like those. I like those.
Well, then I'd like to recommend that you watch on demand. It's called The Third Man. Have you ever heard of it?
Of course.
Of course. Well, there you go.
Well,
I think it's a great movie.
Third Man.
And it's Carol Reed directed it, Orson Welles, Joseph Cotten.
Yep.
He's a – Joseph Cotten's like a novelist, a pulp novelist. He goes to, over to Vienna, and he's looking for his friend, and his friend he thinks is dead. It's not so dead. And it's a whole little thing, and there's, you know, it's a very, very strong, like, noirish kind of espionage thriller. And I have a feeling that The Tourist would be lucky if it was, you know, a pimple on its films or a speck of dust on the film stock of The Third Man. But
I don't know why you have to knock, what do they call that guy? Brangelina?
No, what? Brangelina is Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt.
Oh.
Johnny Depp is a communist or whatever.
Oh. Depolina.
Right, that's how you know him.
Depolina. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Not a comedy. He's an expat. I get those things confused all the time.
All right,
so, The Third Man. I think Nikki, I don't know if Nikki, you've seen that. It's a classic film, but I mean, I really think she might like it. It's a very, like, moody kind of, you know, good film.
Well, that's
and
good.
Please Give also
Nikki's
good.
Moody. That's good.
Well, I wasn't what I was trying to say, but, you know.
No, I understand what you're saying. That's the way I can sell it to her. And then she'll be asleep in the first 15 minutes anyways. So.
Oh, yeah, certainly. You know, whatever. Then you can just have fun.
So let's hear. Dorsey had a great pick.
Oh, let me hear Dorsey's.
Let's hear.
I watched a movie called The Art of the Steal. And it's about an art foundation in Pennsylvania that the guy who started the trust made some specific things in his will saying that this art could not be moved and could not go to the Philadelphia Museum specifically. And they end up getting it. And it's about how, you know, they use politics and backroom deals and all this kind of stuff. And Ed Rendell comes off looking pretty bad. And I don't know. It was just a really, really interesting movie.
Yeah, I've heard of that movie, and I've heard it's very interesting. I haven't seen it. But look at Dorsey. You know, he could take my job then.
Yeah. I just watched a lot of
Maybe you, and Dorsey should confer before you come on Fridays and just take Dorsey's suggestions. And, you know,
I thought my suggestions are good. I mean, Parks and Recreation is a funny show, Sam. People love it. People love it. You know.
I know. People love it. I've heard people love it. All right. Well, Chris Rosen, thank you so much. This week's picks, Please Give on Demand and The Third Man on Netflix streaming.
Yes. And next week we'll be back for a little Christmas special, I think. We can do some holiday movies because it's a week before Christmas.
That's a great idea. That's a great idea.
I guess we'll talk then.
Now, when are we going to ever get you in studio? Never?
Not until the new year, probably.
Oh, great. Great.
I know you'll still be around. So
I'd say there's a 75% chance.
Yeah, you know, 50% chance. So I'll see you then.
Chris Rosen, thank you so much. We got to get some music for you or something. So,
yeah, let me write that down and we'll see if I can think of something.
Okay, think of a good song that is in the public domain. All right, talk to you later, Chris.
Bye.
There he goes. There he is, folks. Chris Rosen. With our picks for the week. Let's jump into the news. And, you know, maybe what we'll do is we'll take some IMs a little bit earlier today, too. Yeah. We'll see here. So here's the situation with the tax deal. I don't know what the situation with the tax deal is. And I'm not being I've done my work. I have researched all my area, but there seems to be sort of conflicting reports here. And, of course, you know, there were conflicting reports from the very beginning. People seem to think that this tax deal, as soon as it was announced, was a done deal. And then very quickly it appeared that it wasn't a done deal. The House voted. Was this just yesterday? No, this was 2 days ago. I'm confused. It was yesterday the Democratic caucus and Nancy Pelosi came out and said, we're not going to vote on the deal as is. We just will not bring it up for a vote. According to Huffington Post last night at 11:22 p.m., the White House and key lawmakers cleared the way for a swift Senate action to avert a January 1 spike in income taxes. Now, I don't see how... And maybe this is just in the Senate they've made a deal, and they haven't quite gotten there with the House. But the way in which he supposedly have secured the Senate vote is tax provisions aimed at increasing production of hybrid automobiles, fine, biodiesel fuel. Is it biodiesel fuel or ethanol? Because ethanol, as far as I can tell, is a joke.
Yep. Totally.
Energy-efficient homes, good. Coal, not so helpful. Energy-efficient household appliances would be extended through the end of 2011 under the bill. So I guess if you're buying new windows in your home, more stimulus, more good stimulus. And but, you know, again, I think we've talked about, or I certainly have talked about what I perceive as problems with the deal ad nauseum. A test vote is supposedly going to be set for Monday afternoon that appears to likely demonstrate overwhelming support for the legislation. I guess this is a test vote in the Senate where they'll do some type of procedural vote to see where everybody is on this. This looks like it'll be interesting to see if this is going to be the first piece of legislation, or at least the first one that I can recall, that will be passed, proposed by Obama, passed by a majority with a greater plurality of Republicans than Democrats. This will be an interesting perspective on what is to come. Meanwhile, Talking Points memo this morning said the White House is still scrambling to save the tax cut deal. And no one's really quite sure of what's going on. So We don't know. And this is interesting, though. You'll recall as late as yesterday during our program, I was saying that the fact that the House, Democratic caucus in the House, is not interested in this deal is going to be very problematic because Club for Growth and Senate nut job Jim DeMint were against it. Well, sometime between then and today, Club for Growth came out for it. Now, remember, Club for Growth is sort of an interesting bridge between the Republican establishment and the Republican whack jobs. And they have come out, when they came out against the deal, DeMint came out against the deal, Sarah Palin, and at this point, listen, the only reason why it's important to watch Sarah Palin is because I'm convinced that even the Tea Party doesn't want her. Like, that the Tea Party, that what happens to her will be a function of just how powerful, how much the Republican establishment is controlling the Tea Party. Now, I know that they're backing it and they've ginned it up, but, you know, you remember during the immigration debate, the Republicans had created that Frankenstein, which was talk radio, and had let the racist fervor gel a little too much in their base, and they couldn't control them. And it'll be interesting if the Republicans still have the amount of control they need to push forward legislation. It's one thing to sort of, function as a catalyst with your millions of dollars to rile up these people. It's another to be able to sort of channel them and herd them like the sheep and cows that they are into line. So you had DeMint, you had Club for Growth, DeMint, Sarah Palin, and even Michelle Bachmann come out and express reservations with the tax deals. And then,
surprise, surprise,
Grover Norquist, Club for Growth, comes out in favor of it. Grover Norquist comes out in favor of it. Club for Growth says they're not going to primary anybody who votes for it, essentially releasing the votes. And then DeMint backs down, and Michelle Bachmann stays silent. And it's, there it is, folks, like magic. In a world of pure imagination. You know, and I can't tell if it's just because they realize, like, oh, this is a great deal. We're going to be able to really F some stuff up. Or if it's just like, oh, the progressive seems to be against it. So, you know where we go. This is the interesting, this is a really interesting thing that I think the tax cut deal is going to start to bring into focus, because I really do think, I'm moving into Glenn Beck territory here, but I really do think that what we're going to enter a period where progressives are going to become increasingly not just marginalized but isolated, and there is really going to be a retrenchment. There are going to be some clear lines of delineation. There's going to be some there's going to be a lot of fighting on the left, and there's going to be, I'm not sure what's going to come out of this, but I think it's just going to get uglier, because we're headed down this path of austerity, and it's quite clear that we just as progressives and as rational and sane people, we just don't seem to have the leverage. And it's also becoming increasingly clear that public opinion on these issues, that electoral might, also are not giving us the leverage. And so I'm not sure what the solution is. And I hope people don't get so disgusted and turned off that they don't want to follow this stuff anymore. I mean, I certainly can understand that feeling. But I don't know what you do. I mean, you're going to bury your head in the sands, and then you're going to wake up in a couple of years, and we're going to be even more effed up than we are now. So I don't know what the solution is. And perhaps one of the things is important, you know, that's why this piece struck me, is because we need a clear perspective on what the on where the lines are on this playing field, where the and this guy Andrew Sable, S-A-B-L, and for the life of me, I'm sorry, I can't remember where what blog I found it at, but I found it via Kevin Drum at Mother Jones. He linked to it, and he talks about this furious debate over the tax deal. Reflects disagreements amongst Democrats and liberals across three separate dimensions. So there are sort of three planes here in which you can look at this debate. One is idealists versus pragmatists. And he makes the argument that Obama is clearly a pragmatist. At the very least, you know, that press conference revealed it, and he believes it was obvious before then. Fine. Very well. I wonder what it says about the guy who writes the book Audacity of Hope and then turns out to be a so pragmatic of a person. Maybe that's a very pragmatic move too. Project a certain amount of idealism at certain times. But Andrew Sable, proposes a division of moral labor. Idealists should stick to citizen activism and have a huge and genuine role to play there while leaving legislation to the pragmatists. He concedes that not everyone thinks that. Of course, there are plenty of reasons pragmatists might and do oppose the deal, but idealists will more likely oppose it more bitterly. I actually consider myself a pragmatist. And I disagree with this deal on very pragmatic grounds that that I think reveal themselves in his second dimension. But the pragmatic grounds are ones that we discussed yesterday with Chris Hayes, that, you know, you can... I guess this is the analogy I was working on last night while I couldn't sleep, and I avoided watching Lawrence O'Donnell last night so I could sleep, but of course it didn't work out. The analogy that I will use for this, for why I see this as problematic, is if you look at these legislative battles as little islands, like almost like the Florida Keys. And we're leaving mainland Florida, heading to the Keys, and there's one bridge. And my concern is that we're going to cross this bridge, and the bridge itself is geared towards to crumble in a year by the terms of the deal. And we will not be able to build the next bridge to the next island because we will have no way of going back and resupplying ourselves. Does that make sense? Yeah. Vaguely? And for me, that's not an idealistic equation. That's a very pragmatic equation. And this is where he gets into it, and this is what the one that really struck me. It's most interesting. He says there's a battle here amongst liberals and Democrats between civic Republicans, this is all small r, I should say, and non-Republican liberals. Civic Republicanism, he says, is an awkward label for a common position that the fundamental issue of our time is the ability of the rich and corporations to game the political system and prevent the rest of us from exerting true self-governance. I suppose you could also argue this is a populist argument, but not in terms of economics as much as it is in terms of the process of our government. He says, in contrast, a non-Republican liberal position is that giving material sustenance to the poor is more important than whether the rich get paid off, however regrettable and undeserved that is. This is not unlike Chris Hayes's analogy of the protection racket. And then this guy, Andrew Sable, actually says, Randy Rhodes has been pushing this position hard on her show and her blog, and Obama has explicitly taken it as well. And this captures part of that notion. You know, one of the things that the public option was so important for people like me and others that advocated for, and perhaps you, was that we saw that as dealing with what the fundamental problem was, and that is that corporate and moneyed interests have an undue influence on our society. They have superseded their role in society and now are controlling it and organizing it in such a way that benefits flow to them in an unreasonable amount. And that fundamental change is necessary. So, for instance, if we had a politician who was talking about change, and we would, that's the change that we were thinking of. I'm not sure what the change Obama was thinking of at that time. You know, I think, I can't remember, maybe it was on Olbermann's show, actually, at one point, where I said, you know, I was watching Obama during the pre-elections, and he's talking about, you know, change, and I said, you know, I used to think I knew what that meant. Now, I don't know. And then he talks about the third dimension here, which is immediate results people versus repeated game players. He says that many of the deal supporters, Steve Bannon and Ed Kilgore, Steve Bannon is a great blogger, actually one of my favorite bloggers. We got to have him on. I don't know why we haven't. What is the name of his blog again? I just know it's Steve Bannon. I can't remember. It'll come to me in a second. Has started to ask opponents what they propose the next move is if it's voted down. And Sable, an opponent of this, says, we opponents frankly don't have a great answer so much as a different question. How can we change baseline expectations so as to achieve progressive outcomes in future negotiations?
Is it the carpetbagger report?
Yes. Yeah. Well, no, it's not the carpetbagger report. That's what it used to be at.
That I don't know.
I can't remember. Maybe it is the carpetbagger report still. The deal supporters largely rely on the argument that results now are very important, either because in a recession, those who lose benefits will face great and immediate hardship, or because stimulus now will crucially boost Democratic prospects in 2012. Now, Krugman, in his blog post the other day, undercut this premise. He thinks that it actually may hurt Obama's chances because it will give a one-year bump, but then things will start to turn sour. And it has less to do with where unemployment and economic situation is at as opposed to where it's trending. And he's afraid that in 2012 it'll start trending against those forces that would provide for a re-election in 2012. Sable goes on to say, most of the policy wonks, by the way, are lining up behind the deal because their professional deformation, I can't tell if that's a value-neutral word or if is in fact a, but I would subscribe to the latter. Their professional deformation is to solve the immediate problem rather than looking at the future negotiations situation it sets up. And I would argue that, you know, this is one of the problems, or the difficulties, I should say, that liberals have always had. That the liberal political class is dominated by a perspective that is wonkish and academic. And therefore looks only at these things in terms of their immediate impact without any notion of politics that are involved in policy. Government is not just policy. And I would add, taking this argument a step further, that the policy wonks and those that hold them in the highest esteem tend to be the biggest hippie punchers. They tend, and, you know, so by this I'm talking about the liberal establishment who do not value the contributions of activists and those who have a more political perspective on these things. Because they come again, they're not as smart as the policy wonks. But they come from that sort of same tout le monde. They come from that same world. And so they necessarily, they end up being the biggest hippie punchers. And then, of course, after a while, they just get divorced from policy, and they just like the hippie punching because that seems to be so successful for them in their careers. But Sable wants us to remember something. Both sides of these debates have immeasurably more in common with each other than the Republicans, who want to sabotage Democrats tactically and also destroy them ideologically. Dislike the welfare state passionately on principle while wanting to, as a matter of principle and practice, to give the rich and corporations more money and power, not less, and are excellent players on the oligarchical side of both one-shot and repeated games. So, in other words, vigorous criticism amongst ourselves is necessary and to be expected, but we should save our real outrage for the proper target, Republicans. I don't know if I subscribe to this as much anymore. I don't know. I'm not saying, yes, I find the Republicans repugnant and outrageous and will certainly take the opportunity to point that out. And on this program, I don't focus on that as much. You know, we have our first, I think, Beck audio in 3 weeks. Just because it's so insane and it's Casual Friday. But I do really think that there may be a battle to be waged within the Democratic, progressive, liberal sphere that the hippies may need to start waging a little bit more. The political activists may need to start waging a little more. Because it's not working. It's not working. We took the House, we took the Senate, took the executive branch, and it's not working. Something is dysfunctional, horribly, horribly dysfunctional. And I think it's important to start to really have clarity on these lines so that we can figure out what the next steps are. We're gonna take a break now. We'll take a break, and then we come back. We'll continue on to this theme with trying to figure out which audio we have for today is more crazy. The Glenn Beck audio or the President Obama audio? Now, I can tell you, the Glenn Beck audio is batshit crazy. It's super, super crazy. It's crazier. But I guess the real question is, which one is more dangerous? We're going to take it. What is this?
You put this on the outro CD.
Yeah. Take it off the outro CD. I don't like it.
It's a little weird.
Yeah. I don't know what that was.
I don't know.
Maybe that was a little experimental. Put something put something a little more peppy.
Can do.
Not so. That sounds like we're all in negligees. We got it. Let's pull it up. A little sad.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll still play it. Be right back. All right, we are back on the phone. Chris Talbot of my favorite charity, Heifer.org. Longtime listeners of the Majority Report and Sam Cedar Show will know that I've talked about Heifer.org, but this is the time of year where people are looking for gifts but also want to give charity, and Heifer.org is a great place to do it. Welcome to the program, Chris.
Oh, thank you, Sam, and thanks for that endorsement. It's one of my favorite causes, too. I think they do some of the best work in the world. They're really, Heifer International really effectively ends hunger and poverty in a sustainable way.
Now,
it's a really unique model.
Yeah, now it is. Now, I should just say it's HEIFER.org. Tell us exactly, you know, what it does.
Well, for over 65 years now, Heifer has been providing farm animals and training in sustainable agriculture to hungry families around the world. They've helped over 64 million men, women, and children so far. And the way they do that is they provide animals, so goats, cows, chickens, camels, donkeys, llamas, whatever is appropriate to the area. Families have a source of income and food. You know, they've got milk, wool, eggs, plow labor, so they can feed themselves and then sell the surplus to have an income to get housing, to get medicine, to get clothing, whatever it is they need. And I think what really sets Heifer apart and makes it really different and makes it really work is that every family who receives an animal agrees to pass on the gift. So they give offspring from their animal and the training. They pass on the training to other members of their community. So every gift to Heifer literally multiplies as the animal multiplies. So that's sort of the gist of it.
I didn't realize that part. That's fantastic. I mean,
it really sets Heifer apart.
What I do, we have one night during Hanukkah. It's past now, but it's a great gift. It's a great gift to give kids in particular, because kids love little animals, and there's I think I got a book. Is that possible? I got a Heifer International book that told the story.
Yeah, Beatrice's Goat.
Yes, exactly. We've read
book. Yeah, yeah, it tells the story of a little girl, true story of a little girl who was able to go to school because her mom was selling goat's milk from a goat that Heifer International provided, a woman's group in her community. That girl, actually, Beatrice Bira, has since gone on to graduate from high school. She got into college here in the States, and she finished her master's degree last year at the Clinton School for Public Service. And she's doing an internship right now with Professor Jeffrey Sachs. So that's
Holy
an incredible God. Success story.
That's an incredible story. You got to do a sequel, dude. Someone's got to put a sequel out on that book because the kid was so small in the book.
Yeah, you're right. She's an astounding young woman now. I agree with you. There should be a sequel.
It's too bad because Myla, my daughter, she's only 5. She doesn't know who Jeffrey Sachs is. So it's not going to have the same impact as it does when you tell me the story.
It's a story for grown-ups instead or something, yeah.
Right. And so so how does this work? How does Heifer locate the recipients?
You know what, the recipients locate Heifer, and that's another reason why it works. These are people who have organized at some level in their community and know that they need to do something to better their lives. And so, for instance, a women's group in Uganda has said, we need to do something to better our community. And they've organized and they've heard about Heifer through word of mouth that this works. So they approach the local Heifer office in Uganda, which is staffed by Ugandan staff who know the lay of the land. They know what they're doing in that area. And so they work out a program. Heifer doesn't just drop off aid and walk away. There's a 3 to 5 year plan done with the community. It starts with training. There might be a year of training before they get an animal. You can't just drop off an animal and expect them to know how to care for it. You know, or a goat could devastate your little 1 acre plot of land if you're not careful, if you don't learn how to do zero grazing. And so there's all this training that goes into it, and there's a plan. And they might recognize that, we want to have cows, but that's too big. There's not enough water. So first let's start with chickens or goats, and let's work on getting a well for the village. So in some ways, you're organizing small farmers' associations. It's not like one family gets helped. It's whole communities. So that's the gist of it. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, no, that's fascinating. Now, how many offices in how many different countries are there offices?
Over 50 countries around the world. And another reason Heifer works is, like I mentioned, it's staffed by citizens of that country. So, you know, Honduras is Honduras citizens, and Uganda is Ugandan citizens, and Cambodia is Cambodians. Which, again, Heifer is the opposite of that top-down kind of let's send money through the government's approach. It's a grassroots-driven approach. Local community groups come to us. We partner with local NGOs. We hire local staff who know what they're doing in the territory. They speak the language. They know the unique problems facing each community. So it's another reason why it's so effective. And a lot of people are getting on board with this. I mean, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has partnered with Heifer in a huge program in East Africa because they recognize that Heifer's having an impact in succeeding where so many others have failed others with good intentions, but they're failing, and Heifer is succeeding.
And so it wasn't. So Heifer doesn't say we're going to go into these 50s countries. They wait essentially until locals approach them, and that's the way the process is initiated.
That's right.
Interesting.
That's right. It comes from the grassroots up. It comes from people recognizing they want to do something, and the people choose the animals. It's not like we're running around the world saying you should have cows, you should have goats. These are animals that are indigenous. They're sourced locally. It's all appropriate to the terrain and to the culture because the groups are choosing for themselves. Well, how can I better my community? It might be a water buffalo allows a farmer in Southeast Asia to plow 10 times as much land, or it could be a donkey helps a farmer get food that he already had to a market that he didn't have access to, or llamas are good for that. In South America, very poor families are stuck. They've been pushed out to the edges of what is farmable, and to get their product to market is a real challenge, and a llama can change that, and they provide wool as well. So it's just a really smart solution to ending hunger and poverty, basically. And the way that we raise our money is you can, you know, during the holiday season, people can help. You can buy a cow or buy a flock of chicks or buy a llama for someone on your gift list.
Right.
You can go to heifer.org, and there's an online gift catalog, and you can choose a gift that you know, and your gift recipient will get a card that says, you know, I've donated a goat in your name, and a family around the world is enjoying the benefits of that, and they're going to pass on the goat to another family, and this gift will keep rippling outward. And so it's a great gift idea. I do it. I buy lots of people on my gift list heifer honor gifts. I guess you said it's become part of your Hanukkah tradition. Is that right?
Yeah, that's basically why I wanted to have you guys on. Is that this is what this year, Myla got a goat and Nikki got a sheep. I think it was. And
wow,
yes, you can go and you can pick it out and you can print out a card and then you know you can talk about it with your kid. In a really, you know, it's a great program, and we did get that book, and
Sam, you're absolutely right. This is a great way to start a conversation with your kids about global values and what's happening in the world. It is accessible to a kid, and Heifer really works that way. And teachers, there's all kinds of programs Heifer offers for teachers, actually, and people might want to just go to the website if you're a teacher, and they've got study tools that are accessible. You can find it on the website. But
all right, Chris. Well, listen, thank you very much. It's heifer.org, heifer.org. We have a link at majority.fm, correct?
That's right.
We will. And
okay.
Thanks so much, Chris. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate you, Sam. Happy holidays.
All right. Yes, you too. We'll talk to you
later. All right, bye.
Apparently a member of the anti-war, anti-Christmas brigade. Happy holidays. I wonder why you would say that. This is the one I'm going to put on my 360 right now. Oh, wait, that's not it. I'm playing some audio about learn how not to procrastinate. Wait, what happened? I'm not hearing that. Did you just down that? No,
yeah.
Keep my computer feeding. Ready?
There we go.
Now, I don't know whether or not it's better to have this for the Obama audio or the Beck. Let's use it for the Obama audio. Okay, we're going to start with the part that is less insane but more scary, and then we will move to the more insane since it's Casual Friday. Finish this up with a little bit of a laugh. Trying to keep it light, folks. Trying to keep it light. Trying to keep you your spirits up at a time where it looks like it's a little bit crazy out there. So apparently, somebody tweeted me this. Obama's on NPR today. And I don't even see, what did Inskeep say after this guy on NPR? Of course, you can't, I mean, there's no way Obama goes on the show without knowing that, like, oh, I can say anything that this won't be a problem. It's NPR. Okay, so this is NPR, this morning's interview with NPR. I don't know what the show was. Does it really matter? Don't they all sound the same? So if you really want to know just where the what the fight is going to be, here it is.
Republicans argue, and in fact won't reality argue, that any cuts will have to be even deeper because this package that you're pushing for now will mean there's even less government revenue.
Actually, I think that if you talk to economists, both conservative and liberal, what they'll say is the problem is not next year.
Okay, now stop for a second. Let's pause this. So Inskeep, of course, is you know, worried about the bond market, I guess, and is saying, like, oh, I've completely bought into the whole deficit thing is a massive problem. Won't this increase the deficit? Won't you need more severe won't you need even more deep cuts because of this package? You know, they're completely neglecting that if this package was effective, which again, I don't think it's going to be because of political realities. But if this package was effective, the idea would be that it would help to grow the economy. The way you will get out of a deficit and a debt situation is to grow the economy, period. You need more revenues. Sometimes you've got to spend a little money to make money. I got news for you. This show would not exist if I did not deficit spend. I couldn't raise money for the show before I rented the office. It's just a little microcosm there for your conservative friends who walk around like Victoria Jackson and say, oh my God, they're spending money to reduce how much they owe. Any business person knows this is what you do. You don't go and say, I'm going to start a restaurant, so I'm going to not spend money on a kitchen or food. I mean, that's just, everybody knows who's in business. First you spend money, maybe it's yours, maybe it's your investors, maybe it's a loan, with the hopes that your investment will give you greater returns. That's what we're talking about here. Now, so I'm getting mad at just the existence of NPR at this point. We're not even getting to the point that's really disturbing. Let's start it over again from the beginning here.
Won't Republicans argue, and in fact won't reality argue,
no, reality
that
argue
any cuts will have to be
ever.
Even deeper because this package that you're pushing for now will mean there's even less government revenue?
Actually, I think that if you talk to economists, both conservative and liberal, what they'll say is the problem is not next year. The problem is, how are we dealing with our medium-term debt and deficit, and how are we dealing with our long-term debt and deficit? And most of that has to do with entitlements, particularly Social Security and Medicaid.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Did you say our long-term debt and deficit? Most of that has to do with entitlements. Particularly Social Security? Now, Medicaid is got problems. I would agree. But Social Security has nothing to do with our long-term debt and deficit until you get this tax holiday, payroll tax holiday, make up for the losses to the Social Security Trust Fund with money that comes from the general fund. And Jim DeMint says, look, Social Security is draining the government. So, I mean, is this a guy that we want to empower at this point? I mean, is it a legitimate argument anymore that if you don't do X, Y, and Z, you will handicap the president? Okay, and that's bad because? Well, he won't be able to do some of the good things, like the EPA. like that he's been doing so much work with the EPA. And oh, wait, I'm sorry. No, I read that wrong. The Obama administration is retreating on long-delayed environmental regulations, new rules governing smog and toxic emissions from industrial boilers, as it adjusts to a changed political dynamic. It will leave in place policies set by President George Bush.
We'd like to thank you, Herbert Hoover, for really showing us the way. We'd like to thank you,
and before we get to the only other reason that I'm not lying prone on my back right now. Before we get there, you should know that ex-White House budget director Peter Orszag, I think I mentioned this the other day, he's the guy who laid out the blueprint for this deal in a New York Times op-ed months ago. He has, he's taken a job at Citibank. New York Times points out that, just coincidentally, a decade ago, former Treasury Secretary Robert Rubin left the Clinton administration to become a senior advisor and board member at Citigroup, collecting a $10 million a year paycheck. Are you ready for this, folks? With no management responsibility. And on Thursday, Peter Orszag, President Obama's first budget director and a protege of Mr. Rubin, followed in his mentor's footsteps and joined Citi's investment banking group as a vice chairman. Orszag, at 41, is the second cabinet official to join Citi this month, and his appointment comes days after the Treasury Department's $10.5 billion stock offering helped further extricate the bailed-out bank from Washington.
Well done. Well played. Very well played. Yes, indeed.
Both men, including Carlos Gutierrez, former Commerce Secretary under President George Bush, will become members of Citi's Senior Strategic Advisory Group. This is my favorite line. This is my favorite line in the entire story. Mr. Orszag's actual duties are murky at best.
Ooh.
He supposedly can't advise Uncle Sam, the U.S. government.
Right. Right.
We could really use his advice. Worked out so well the first time. Unbelievable. I'm not going to read the rest of the suppressing stories. Let's listen to some Glenn Beck, who is completely batshit crazy, and understand that millions of people listen to him on his radio show on a daily basis. So on one side, we have... Obama attacking Social Security. And on the other side, we have this total fucking nut job on Fox News. You remember them, the ones who are advocating that we refer to our public parks as government parks. let's just play a little of this clip. Just, you know, it's Friday. It's Casual Friday.
Everyone is arguing the wrong things on the WikiLeaks story.
Now, wait, was this the beginning of the show?
He's a hero. No, he's not. He's a traitor.
Okay.
Think out of the box.
Think out of the box.
Tonight, I'm going to zoom out. I'm going to show you the big picture because it is much, much deeper. WikiLeaks is huge.
It's huge.
But it's only a piece of the perfect storm. And you must think out of the box. It is much deeper, and there are things that I wouldn't have believed any of this 2 years ago.
I can't believe even what I'm saying now.
But it's never just about one singular issue with progressives and radicals and revolutionaries.
Stop it for one second.
The Now,
like Glenn Beck and I are almost word for word saying the same things, except for I was talking about Joe Lieberman maybe supporting Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and he is talking about radicals and progressives who have slowly, while we were sleeping, taken over everything. I just, like, what? God, Jesus. This is, it's fucking brilliant. And I'll tell you, folks, I wish I had the capacity to do what he does for the right, for the left. You know, I really do. I really wish I had the ability. And I think, like, how can I do this? how can I say stuff that is so fucking batshit crazy, but will move a progressive agenda forward if only because I will be on the periphery, and that if I could have even, you know, 30,000 people believing that the I don't know what the equivalent would be on the left, but like just, you know, these 30,000 batshit jihadi, you know, sort of just like kamikaze style, we've got to, I mean, I, you know, it's, I don't even know what the equivalent would be. I really don't know, because this is not just a question of rhetoric. You know, his rhetoric isn't, you know, nothing I've just played about his rhetoric, if you isolate any of these, it's when you start to stitch them together, it's just like, is there something incendiary about saying there are interterrestrials amongst us who come from Mount Shasta, and these people are changelings, which, of course, is why you can't tell that they're aliens. They've been here for hundreds of years, and they've been waiting for the opportune moment, which involves a certain diminishment of our ozone layer and the buildup of greenhouse gases. This is why we need cap and trade, because if we do not have it, the interterrestrials that walk amongst us will find the atmosphere perfectly suited for them to return to their lizard bodies and use their special powers. They can't open. Do you understand that the changelings amongst us, they cannot open their inner eyelids, which would allow them to use their X-ray vision and destroy everyone with just the use of their eyes until we reach a certain amount of CO2 released in the atmosphere. This is why we must get cap and trade. This is why we need climate change legislation, because if we do not do it, the interterrestrials who have permeated our biggest industries, because they have just better than average ability to operate in business when they are in the changeling form of humans, to get us to a point where they're able to pollute the atmosphere in such a way that they can open up their inner eyelids, which will allow them then to release their X-ray vision and their it's not just X-ray vision. This was, I thought for years that it was just X-ray vision, and I came across some writings from the early 1920s which have made it clear to me now that it is not X-ray vision that we are dealing with here with these interterrestrials who are putting CO2 into the atmosphere so they can open their inner eyelids. It's a special type of laser beam. Have I figured it out? Have I just cracked the code?
I think so.
We better get new servers for this fucking podcast, man. This is going to be crazy. Play a little more Glenn Beck before we go out.
About one singular issue with progressives and radicals and revolutionaries. The revolution has begun. I never thought I was...
Yes! Dead,
but I understand that it has today. The people you're up against... have buried themselves in our government, and they have been wearing masks for a long time, but they're about to take those masks off. And understand, they want control of every aspect of your life, because the world is about to change. And while they try to convince you that it's not, it is, and they know it is. They want to control every aspect of life to make society more just, but from their perspective. I showed you last
nice
night,
that he
I told you that if I were
nice
going to take over
yeah.
the world, because that's what Forbes said, that Soros said of me, that I was going to start some dictatorship because you're too stupid.
Hmm. Well, so far
2 years ago, as I was trying to figure out how far along are they, I put a list together, and this is just some of them. If I were going to take over the United States, what would I need? What would I need to do?
Boots,
well, you'd have to
boots.
Control the financial sector. They did it with the financial bill. They control everything in the financial sector. You'd have to control healthcare, who lives, who dies. You'd have to control industry. That can be done through the financial sector. It can be done through taxes. And it can also be done through bailouts, just taking them. Like GM. You'd need to control the military. This one is really tough. Because the military is not going to be... They protect and defend the Constitution of the United States. Please, dear God, if you are listening to me in any part of the world, and you are military, please, dear God, please remember your oath to the Constitution of the United States.
I want to add to any military personnel who are listening at this moment, do you understand that when CO2 levels get to be a certain point, and also when we hit a certain number of foreclosures, which of course makes it possible for interterrestrials to open their inner eyelids and use the secret powers that are involved in their pupils, that your commanding officers who have achieved this status because they are in fact interterrestrials, who have used centuries, even greater, millennia of space warfare studies. They study in space warfare. That is how they have become your leaders in the military. Understand that when we hit the CO2 level, their inner eyelids will drop. They will attempt to force you to bend to their will. I beg you, please, try and see if you can get into a shower with them. They will have webbing under their arms. Look for the webbing. I don't know if someone's going to turn off this microphone. It's probably likely. Most of the engineers are interterrestrials. They don't need to use their inner eyeballs to stop my broadcast. Most of them are engineers. They could just simply figure out a way of flipping a switch. They probably won't, just because they don't want to tip you to their presence. You know what maybe we should do is just like a whole day show like that. See if I get a little play. Yeah. This will be awesome. All right, folks. I'm going to say goodbye. We'll see you on Monday. We'll have Glenn Greenwald with us on Monday. If you stick around, you can chat with me on the IM. We are working on ways of sequestering this. So, this song I really like. Maybe we need to... there we go. All right, folks, this is Luna off of some French pop album. All right, stick around. You can IM me at Majority FM. Have a great weekend, folks. Thank you very much to our members. If you didn't receive a membership email, please email us at majorityreporters@gmail.com. You should have. A couple of you have bad email addresses that you put in when you signed up. Not our fault. Your fault! Or is it? Could it have been the interterrestrials trying to stop me? See you Monday. Smitty 1241 tells me I didn't get the email. Thanks. So if you didn't get the email, Smitty, was that yesterday? Yeah, it was. Well, email us at majorityreporters@gmail.com, s'il vous plaît. PB True, got my order from Just Coffee this morning. Can't wait for the first cup. You'll enjoy it. Avedon Carroll mentioned a movie I'd never seen, even though it had an all-star cast. Redford, Kingsley, Aykroyd, Sneakers. PB True, did you not listen to the show yesterday? Did you not hear?
We talked about Sneakers for like half the show.
Yeah, Sneakers. I'm going to write down Sneakers. I don't give a shit what Chris Rosen suggested. I wrote Sneakers again. Uh, Still waiting for that mouse pad. PB Tree, email me at majorityreporters@gmail.com. I promise I'll send you one. Don't be a putz. Did you see Larry's panels last night? You have to admit that Nader continues to be proven right. Netflix replaced Times Company in the S&P 500. Wow. Bonus Sammy Camp today. I love behind the scenes. Don't be a putz. I didn't see Nader last night. Yeah, the problem with Nader was not that he was wrong in his estimation. The problem is that he his run turned out to be more about him. That was the problem with Nader. He didn't build the Green Party like he said he would. Look, I vote for a swap for the guy in 2000. But he did say that he wasn't going to run in those states where he could actually challenge, you know, he could actually hurt Gore. I don't blame him for the election. I don't. I blame the Supreme Court. But he certainly hurt his credibility with me. How did that work out, his run? How did it work out? Wasn't that he didn't have a point. It's just that his solution was no solution at all. If we were heading that direction, he certainly didn't help slow it down. Let's put it that way. Kev, WikiLeaks is the universe's response to Fox News and Judith Miller's New York Times. Obama post-election strategy. If you can't beat him, join him. I agree with both those things. Yes, Matthew says that parents, his mom totally gifts heifer to the kids. Nefer, I promised you I have Steve Bannon on. We will have Steve Bannon on. I promise. I probably gave Steve Bannon his first radio. I'd be willing to bet that right now. Please say to hi to PB True from me on the show. Neffer says hi, PB True. When did economists become partisan? Forever.
It's true.
Kenny Mack. Hey, have you heard this rumor floating around? It claims the reason you filled in for Keith was not because he was sick. It seems that Keith and Rachel attended a secret meeting in Washington. It included what did you link to the word Washington? Included bloggers and other voices on the left. It was meant to sway them the day before the deal was cut. One blogger who attended said she was told to be quiet about who attended. It was just as well as who moderated it. If you can't talk about it, we'll just say the wet duck only flies at midnight. No, I don't know if the wet duck flies at midnight or not. I did not know about this. I know nothing about it. The only thing I do remember is that the night that he came back, Keith did say a senior White House official told him. Now, maybe it was by phone, maybe it was at this meeting. I don't know. I honestly know nothing about it. Nothing.
I wonder if Ed knew about it.
I guess Ed wasn't there. William Gibson books are known as cyberpunk. I've read at least one or two of these, though talking about them just reminds us how bad Keanu Reeves was in Johnny Mnemonic. Major follower. Yesterday, I sent my request for swag and told my wife her 40th birthday is next week, and she informed me that she wanted a mouse pad. As a fundamental Christian and libertarian, I am head of my household. I am putting my foot down, and there is no way that I will ever get a mouse pad for her. Do you have any mouse pads left, and could I send a check to buy one for her? I'll tell you what, majority follower. Do not tell anybody else I'm telling you this. Send us an email. And make that special request. Harold, ethanol is a joke. Biodiesel rocks. On the other hand, it can be made from... Yes, biodiesel is good, yes. But in this story, it was unclear if they meant biodiesel or ethanol. Because they refer to ethanol as biodiesel. When in fact, it's not really the same thing. Harold's been running his vehicles on it since 2001. Locally grown, cleaner, no wars needed. Bernie's 1150. Bernie's Sanders is on the Senate floor. Starting. Why didn't you tell me this? Don't. Will you shake your head?
You were in the middle of the Glenn Beck thing. I was like,
You should say before we go. You should. C-SPAN calls a tax cut filibuster. It's on C-SPAN too. Good for him. Good for him. Bennin is doing political animal now, right? He took over for Kevin Drum at Washington Monthly. That's what it is. Thank you, Abaddon. Cool logo. That's a very cool logo. You catch Stewart making the ridiculous case that calling Republicans hostage takers would lead to more hostage taking? That's why. No, I didn't see that. Right. You know what? Maybe there should be no metaphors. Maybe it should just be call them out what they are. But you say Obama on Mythbusters the other night? No, I didn't. Even his myth was a bust. What was he talking about? Social Security is the... I don't like that there's another Kevin on the IM, says Kevin semicolon. Thinking of changing my name to interterrestrial. No. It's not interterrestrial. You folks have got to listen.
Do your own homework.
Do your own homework. Do not take what I say as gospel. I don't want you to. I'm simply telling you that if you do your homework and you Google inner terrestrial, you will find that I'm not... What I am talking about is real. Some of you have maybe never heard of Mount Shasta. Mount Shasta is real. Dorsey, have you seen Mount Shasta?
I have.
Yes, you see? But don't believe me. Google Mount Shasta. You will see pictures. It's there. Republican senators block 9/11 health bill. What a bunch of fuckers. Talk about self-centered, Sandy McGee. Yes. Hypocrite. Sorry about that. My cat stepped on the keyboard when I was done typing. I could go on and on about Rebuke thugs. I'm sure if you've heard it all before, have a great weekend, Sam. Love you. Oh, my point about the bill and 9/11 health bill. I wish you had more time to read each name of the fuckers who voted no on that bill. Better yet, put it on your website. We should probably link to it. I love your show. It helps me understand what the hell is going on. In other words, you explain it so I can understand it. That's a good thing. Beck equals.
You are a douchebag.
Daddy says, Aang, not only can you give sheep goats water buffalo, you can give her a heifer. That's correct. Get a big blackboard right on it so we know whether it's interterrestrial or interterrestrial. Gatoron. But you didn't abandon it. Gatoron. Ron B. Okay. I would support Bloomberg. Many moderate independents and Republicans would, too, I suspect. So a coalition with progressive, many Dems and Indy is basically what O did. Bloomberg could repeat. I think the biggest implication of a challenger to Obama is a Bloomberg, is an empowerment of Bloomberg. And I am still waiting for, a reason to, I don't know, someone can point out like a good reason why not Mike Bloomberg. David Rodriguez, reason for no real Beck on the left, liberals are not as easily brainwashed as the conservatives. I don't know. Maybe. Sugar High, I watch Beck every day, and I think he's finally convinced me. Van Jones should be our challenger candidate against Obama in 2012. He's smarter and better looking than Obama and Ralph Nader combined. He can't be accused of racism challenging the first black president. Highly unlikely that's going to happen. Obama's going to give the unemployed a few bucks now just to let them eat cat food when they're due to retire. For a few moments, I thought he was only caving because he really cared about the consequences of unemployment payments coming in. His comments on NPR have ended that belief. Rusty Cole. Just so you know, I didn't get the email yesterday, but I've gotten emails from you before. I blame Dewey. Well, Rusty, if you've joined and you didn't get an email, email me at majorityreporters@gmail.com and tell me that, please. Crystal Count, you're getting the cadence and voice run at the end of your left back there, but the material has to go to the edge. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Is Interterrestrials not far enough for you? He doesn't talk about Interterrestrials, but takes basic things like Soros and the financial system, then launches in there into crazy the connections. They are trying to control you. No aliens needed. Beck, all act, or does he believe the spew that he gins up? I don't know. I got to imagine he believes it. I think he's just a little bit crazy. I think he's acting and he believes it. It's both. Hey, Sam, so after the show yesterday, I realized I've been using Netflix less and less, and I decided to cancel my account and use that money to become a Majority Reporter. Well, I am sorry, Netflix, but I got to agree with that. I was going to join the TYT, but Jenks, a Pittsburgh Steelers, dirty Pittsburgh Steelers, ugh. And your closet studio could use the money.
Did they not see the fresh?
Yeah, did you see that? I put the gray paint behind there. Have a great weekend, peaches. I was somewhat upset, said Svengali says, but not in full revolt mode until I saw Austin Goolsby explaining the tax cut fight. Goolsby. Economist to economist, he made me rage with a few sentences. It was a presentation I expect to see on Fox News. He explains that the exchange for the rich tax cuts, which won't affect our deficit debt, horseshit, this is Svengali says, we get tons of stuff in exchange. He even offers the earned income tax credit, which has been around since 1975 and wasn't even up for debate. So his section of what we got in exchange is pretty piss poor, to be honest. He ignores the fact that what we gave wasn't just the tax cuts, but other things. Estate, capital gains, etc., and then goes on to make Republican points for them. Did we elect a guy to make Republican points for them? I'll probably spend 2 hours bio-granting about this later. Oh, blog-ranting about it, but it's wholly depressing. I hear you. Taurusy, what makes your show so great is that you don't play clips of Glenn Beck and others like him. Please keep those clips to casual Fridays only. Thanks. I probably will. I mean, if I was on radio, I'd play, if I was doing a longer show, and I'd play. But, you know, it seems just like there's so many people who do that. Like, it's almost impossible now not to hear a Beck clip. And, frankly, you get more important things to talk about. But I do think there is value. I do think there is value in his stuff being reverberated because for a long time, Limbaugh was doing this shit in the dark. And nobody knew what was going on. Viper Visor, two twats on a forum I frequent say no funds for WTC workers because it's a specific state's problem. Fed has no obligation. I wonder if you can actually search their names and see what they were saying 10 years ago. Unbelievable. Perilio at optonline.net. JustCoffee.coop order came in yesterday. I don't drink coffee, but they also offer tea and dark chocolate. Great gifts. Chocolate. Hey, Dorsey, did you work on our cards?
Oh, my God. No, I have not. I have, but I haven't finished them.
Don't be putz. I'm starting to think that America will be tired of Sarah Palin between 2012. She's all shtick, and shtick gets old after a while. That's right. Bloomberg runs for president, he'll need Robert Reich as his running mate just to make him look tall. But Reich is the one I really wish were president. It would be fascinating to see who Bloomberg would choose as his VP. It would end up being like, unfortunately, like Evan Bayh, right?
I don't don't know. I would think he'd maybe go for, like, a military guy or somebody, you know, because he doesn't have anything going for him on that end, you know? That's what I would think.
Sam Nunn dead yet?
Don't know.
Right? That's what it would have to be. It would have to be a southern guy, maybe a guy from Texas. Oh, God, please don't let it be Jeb Bush.
No, that would be weird.
Yeah, it would be weird. Yeah, I would agree. That would be weird. That would be weird. Kevin, 11-7-21, I wish we could primary Howard Dean. Why would you primary Howard Dean? Oh, Kev, send me that email to send me that YouTube to use Vicks to cry. Did you see this YouTube where he uses Vicks vapor rubs? Oh, you did? Is that what he did?
It's like for a photo shoot, right?
Oh, is he rubbing underneath? Yeah. Yeah.
It was that, the photo shoot for like his first big cover.
Oh, okay.
I forget what it was.
I suggest you move the vid inset to the upper left. The ads cover his handsome face. Oh, Evan. Neferkitty is a fan. Have an awesome weekend. Sam Nunn is big on those loose nukes issue. He's also just come out in favor of the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, Sam Nunn.
It's very possible.
Shanksoff says, Bloomberg's platform out of the gate, eliminate term limits. Major follower, maybe I'm just stupid, but I still don't understand why they're going after Social Security. What do they actually get other than screwing over old people if they cut the program? To hide the growing deficit, to hit budget numbers. The money that went to essentially make, they didn't offset the tax cuts. The Bush tax cuts in 2001. They didn't offset them. In other words, they didn't have corresponding cuts in government programs or military defense, all of it. And so what they did is they borrowed money from the Social Security Trust Fund. Now, to default on that loan is the equivalent of defaulting on Treasury bills. It would be very problematic, and it would also, first of all, it never happens. It has never happened. And everybody who paid into the Social Security Trust Fund would be enraged. So, but if they cut Social Security and say, hey, we're not going to have any problem meeting our Social Security obligations now, then they can just perpetually not repay those loans to the trust fund. And so this is, it's not that they want old people to suffer. It's they want to redistribute wealth from the wage earners who paid into Social Security in their first $100,000 or so salary, wages, and have it go to finance the tax cuts to millionaires. When you mug an old lady, it's not that you, like, I want to hurt that old lady. Maybe you have some of that. Maybe there's a certain streak of masochism. But what it is you want the money in her wallet. That's what this is about. I just ordered another 6 pounds of Just Coffee. Thanks for the discount. Hang on. Check it. Is that a 6 pound bag? Probably like 3 pounds. 2 pounds. 2 or 3 pounds. God.
I know.
It smells good. Mm. Are we leaving that one here or what?
This one? This is the darkest of them all.
I think Doris is taking that for us.
Well, I'm going to take some of it, but yeah, I'm going to leave some here. I don't know. I mean, I'm going to bring some back powdered.
This really smells good.
Shredded or ground.
Harold, Obama had the Mythbusters revisit the Archimedes experiment again. It was lame since we all know the outcome. A fun way to get everyone involved and failure. Yay, science. Sandy. Bernie is kicking ass.
Yeah.
Give an update.
I've got it. I'm listening to it on C-SPAN. You can watch C-SPAN 2 on C-SPAN.org.
We'll put it on our front page, right?
It's on Facebook right now.
No way Beck believes it. His ongoing narrative takes clear detours when he picks up a new sponsor. Watch him every day for a month and you'll be convinced. Would you please tell Just Coffee to make gift baskets? Then I could do more holiday shopping through them and you get the money. That's a great idea, Rusty Cole.
Yeah.
Why don't they do gift baskets? Let's get some Majority Report gift baskets going. Wait, who was it that was going to do our Jetpack Engage logo?
David?
No, David is working on our other one. It wasn't Ears, was it?
I don't remember.
I mean, what are the dimensions? I'll just take a screen cap of the close-up of his face.
Well, I think you need the scene with the smoke coming out.
Yeah, that's true.
Do that one.
Oh, by the way,
Jetpack Engage is the brand, right?
Kyle just set up on the Majority FM site. There's a button on the top. It's called Majority Reporters. Go ahead and click on it. That's our Tumblr site. It's attached to the Majority FM. So,
do we have directions on there on how to be a Tumblr?
No, but I will put that. I'll put that in the description. Once you click on Majority Reporters, that'll show up at the end of the day.
Folks, we have a lot of great bloggers who have been on MajorityReportRadio.com, on SamSedarShow.com. A lot of people went on. Tony D founded You Think and merged it, I think, with Blue Roots Radio. I'm not, But if you want to post something, you want to share something with the community, this Tumblr is a great way to do it. Isn't it, Dorsey?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's also integrated with social media, so it's a great way to also not only have people see your stuff and help the community and build the community around the show. So check it out at majority.fm. Svengali says, Social Security has been pulling in money ad infinitum. However, this money isn't just sitting around. It's loaned to the government in the form of purchasing T-bills. That's what I said. Money can't be saved in the bank account for the government like you can. This money was then spent, so there are a gigantic amount of T-bills held. Yes, Al Gore wanted that lockbox, but we didn't give it to him. We just made fun of his coat. Cutting Social Security means that the money T-bills not paid can go uncashed since the money was spent right. They're not attempting to take money from the Social Security Trust, but they've already spent the money and they're trying to avoid, right, trying to avoid paying it back. The issue is not that it's pulling in enough money, rather it's an issue of money taking it right. Okay. I think I've been pretty clear about that, Svengali. Bloomberg's platform, also my theory on Obama, he enjoys being in the middle of two kids arguing. I think that's how he sees the parties. Doesn't seek to firmly establish either one. Why can't our presidents be partisan? Obama, hey guys, it takes two to tango. God, I hate that parental line. It's true. And you know what? It's bullshit. It's bullshit. It may take two to tango, but it doesn't take two to fight. Tango is actually something you've got to practice and learn to do. You can actually just fight somebody, even if you're bad at it, if you start swinging your fists. Really, to say it takes two to tango is it takes two people to cooperate to build something that is very precise and technical and you want it to be good in the end. It doesn't take two to fight. Someone has bastardized the two to tango saying. You know what's also interesting? Rolling Stone gathers no moss. What is your perspective on that saying, Evan? What does that mean, Rolling Stone gathers no moss?
Like literally or...
No, I know what literally that means. No, it's an idiom.
If you, I don't know. I've heard in a lot of contexts, but that if something stays, in motion, there's not going to be any sort of decay or any sort of like waste. That's how I always interpreted it.
So if you stay in motion, there's no decay or waste.
Yeah.
So the implication is that it's positive to be a Rolling Stone. Yeah. All right. Yeah, Dorsey. Would you agree with that assessment?
Yes.
That saying originally had the opposite implications. I think it's you can read of Human Bondage, Somerset Maugham. The lead character is scolded with that idiom.
Huh.
If you keep moving around, you will gather no moss. And that's a bad thing back in the 1920s. In fact, I realized this, you know, I can't remember what happened, but when I left law school, my grandfather, who was actually my step-grandfather, who was a lawyer, was a Harvard-educated lawyer, worked his way through, actually, I think he clerked for Frankfurter. Hmm. I'm not sure he clerked for him on the Supreme Court, or he worked with them closely as his teacher. And he wasn't excited when I left law school. I mean, he sort of wrote me off when I didn't get into Harvard undergrad. Anyways, but be that as it may, I was reading Somerset Maugham around the time, I was reading that book right around the time that he said this to me. This was 20 years ago. And he said that to me. And I was confused because I interpreted it like that. As a positive thing. Oh, yeah, you don't want to grow moss. You want to remain dynamic and not stagnant and keep growing. But no, apparently, for that generation, moss, good. And then here's the irony, is that I have been trying to replace all the grass around my house with moss. And I have come to accept that moss is good, yes. But not necessarily on rocks.
From the Twitter, it looks like Liberal Oasis has picked up the gauntlet, or they've thrown it down also. They said that you're going down, Sam Cedar.
You know, I don't know where Dane Cook the man is, but I got an email from Marin. Obviously, it'd been like, he said, sorry, I haven't been on your show yet. I figured it would be around long enough for you not to slag me, you know, because I wasn't something like that in the room. I'm like, look, dude, you can't. I'm not slagging you. But, oh, he's made his, that podcast. I was told originally that the podcast, the WTF that I appeared on was going to be sequestered, and now it's not. So you can hear it. He's got a Louis C.K. podcast that apparently has been downloaded an astronomical.
Yeah, I've heard about that.
Like, have you heard, is it public what the numbers were?
No, the numbers aren't public, but I've heard from a couple people about that podcast.
Is it a good podcast?
Supposedly.
It's been downloaded like, I don't even want to tell you guys. You'd be weeping. Great show today. I can't wait for Monday's Greenwald site is actually how I came across the Majority Report. Wow, there you go.
Nice.
What, this incarnation, Johnny? We had Greenwald on. Yeah, oh, okay. Fantastic. Svengali says, you beat me to it. Indeed I did, sir. I can't believe you haven't addressed a real issue. Miley Cyrus's bong rips.
It's hilarious.
I don't even know what that means. She
let somebody take a video of her taking bong rips at a party.
Is she trying to sort of like...
It could be a plant, but no, I don't know, man. She is really
not
annoying. It's pretty funny.
When she's high?
It's bad.
Is Miley Cyrus... Is she like...
She's super annoying.
Is she... where in the world is... Wait, is she...
Hannah Montana.
She's Hannah Montana.
Yes.
Okay, right.
Hey, I have a question. I was watching Sarah Silverman last night on Conan, and...
She was on Conan last night?
Yeah, she was really good.
I haven't seen Conan's new show, to be honest with you.
It's good. You should watch it. Anyway, she was great. But she was talking about how she's giving away some kind of, like, something... it's a contest, but it's all going to charity. But
right, on Skype.
Yeah. Not just she'll talk to your family, but she's also going to... You can go to brunch with her and her famous friends. I was like, I wonder if Sam Cedar's one of her famous friends.
I don't think so.
No. Dude, if you went onto an auction and you're like, I'm going to win... breakfast with Sarah Silverman, but what I'm really psyched about, Sam Cedar's going to be there too. Folks, you want me to go to brunch with you? Just buy it. I'll go. Kidding me? Take me to brunch? I'll go to brunch. All right, folks, see you on Monday.